Hello, everyone, and happy Monday evening. As Cheryl mentioned, I am here to share from I Am That by Nisargadatta Maharaj. And Cheryl, you're recording, right? Because I'm not recording these, like, because I, from what I understand, you are. Yeah, okay, good. When I record, I sit downstairs at my desk, and this is late enough in the evening that I want to be able to sit upstairs in my recliner in a somewhat relaxed mode. So I'm trusting Cheryl to do the recording and Kim's recording. Okay, good. We're all perfect then. So I'm just going to dive right in. I'm beginning, I'm obviously still in conversation number one, the sense of I am, and I am beginning with the third question. I am always somebody, this is the questioner, I am always somebody with its memories and habits. I know no other I am. I am always somebody, he says. So here's what Nisargadatta says. Maybe something prevents you from knowing. When you do not know something which others know, what do you do? And the questioner says, I seek the source of their knowledge under their instruction. And Nisargadatta says, is it not important to you to know whether you are a mere body or something else? Or maybe nothing at all? Don't you see that all your problems are your body's problems? Food, clothing, shelter, family, friends, name, fame, security, survival, all of these lose their meaning the moment you realize that you may not be a mere body. And I'm just going to pause there for a moment. This weekend, I am going to a retreat in New Mexico, and this retreat is an intensive retreat. It is very intense. In fact, I have never been to a retreat as intensive as this one. I think we'll begin, I have to look, but I think we begin around 5 o'clock on Thursday evening, and we go until 5 o'clock on Sunday evening. And each day while we're there, we'll be in retreat from like something like 6 a.m. in the morning till 9 p.m. at night, and there are no breaks. Even the meals are part of the retreat. We're not allowed to have our phones. It's not a silent retreat. It's called a self-inquiry retreat. Portions of it will be silent, from what I understand, and portions of it will literally be paired up and practicing self-inquiry with each other. The person who is leading it is Jack and Katrin Pottakary, I think is their name. I actually have to look. There's two people that went to India with me in February, and that's when they invited me to the retreat. But what's interesting was today, you know, I had a conversation with Jack, and he was telling me, you know, the rules of the retreat and all that. And I realized, oh, I better tell my family that, you know, that I won't be able to talk to them from Thursday evening until, you know, Sunday night at the earliest, and maybe not even then, because then I'll be driving to La Vida. So maybe Monday before I talk to them. And so I told my family, and there was a little bit of resistance on the part of my family that they wouldn't be able to talk to me or text me during all of that time. And it kind of got me thinking, you know, what if I died? You know, what if I died? They'd have to learn to get by without me, wouldn't they? And then that kind of led me into thinking about, just kind of briefly, I mean, this wasn't a long thought process. It happened kind of quickly and briefly. But I just kind of had this thought or this realization about how if I, how everything would just suddenly drop away. Everything. You know, like I'm sitting here next to a little to-do list. But, you know, those are things that came up for me to do in a meeting a while ago. But that to-do list would just drop. And if it was important to get done, either somebody else would have to do it, or it would just never, ever, ever get done, right? And I'm kind of hearing the same kind of thoughts as I'm reading what Nisargadatta is saying to this questioner. When the questioner says, you know, I only know myself as this person, and Nisargadatta is saying, you know, so you think you're a mere body? Don't you see basically that all of your problems are the body's problems? And then he lists these things: food, clothing, shelter, family, friends, name, fame, security, survival. And he says all of these lose their meaning the moment you realize you may not be a mere body. Right? And it's true that we give monumental importance to things that aren't that important. And how do we know they aren't that important? Because if we died right now, they would just stop. And life would go on. You know, if we died right now, it would just stop. And so if we stop every now and then and kind of contemplate that, we might realize it doesn't mean that that we're not going to move forward now with our relationships and our to-do lists and all of that. But maybe what we want to look at is the monumental importance that we're giving to things. You know, that monumental importance creates feelings like stress. It creates feelings like anger if something doesn't get done the way we think it should be done, or if a relationship doesn't go the way we think it should. It creates feelings like betrayal, rejection, envy, jealousy, fear, right? All of those things are occurring merely because we're giving monumental importance. You know, couldn't we just go right on with this same life and do all of the same things? Like, we don't have to change what we're doing, but just be lighter about everything, right? Just kind of have a lighter attitude. So again, I was reading this paragraph where Nisargadatta is pointing out that all of this man's problems are due to the fact that he perceives himself to be a body. And he says that if he realized he wasn't a body, these things would lose their meaning. And I would say their monumental meaning, right? It's not that necessarily he wouldn't continue to work, for example. Nisargadatta continued to work even after his realization. But it's the meaning, the monumental importance that we give that drops away when we realize we're not a body. Now, the questioner says, what benefit is there in knowing that I am not a body? So he apparently doesn't quite get it, because he's saying, what benefit is there, even though Nisargadatta just listed the benefits? And Nisargadatta says, even to say that you are not the body is not quite true. In a way, you are all the bodies, all the hearts, all the minds, and much more. Go deep into the sense of I am, and you will find it. How do you find a thing that you have mislaid or forgotten? You keep it in your mind until you recall it. Okay, I'm going to pause again. There's a story in the Bible about a woman who I believe she had 10 coins and she lost one. And Jesus talks about how she, you know, she sweeps the entire house clean looking for the one coin that she lost, right? He also tells a story about some shepherds, and I think they had, I might be making this up, I don't know, 99 sheep? Does anybody know if I'm making that up? If I make my own numbers because of my own visions that I read. But they have a lot of sheep, and one wanders off. And they leave all of the other sheep to go and find the one that's wandered off and brought it back. It occurred to me one day, spontaneously, that in those stories, Jesus is talking about the focus that we need to remember the true self. Right? You need the focus that that woman had when she was looking for the one lost coin. Or that the shepherd had when he's looking for the one sheep that wandered off. And really, Nisargadatta is talking about the same thing right now. He says, how do you find a thing you have mislaid or forgotten? You keep it in your mind until you recall it. You keep, so it's like, it's our soul focus. Now, if you think about that for a moment, if our soul focus is remembering truth, then even though I have a to-do list here, and even though I have relationships in my life, there's really only one thing I'm giving monumental importance to. And that's my soul focus of remembering myself, my true self, truth realization. Everything else is happening, and I'm dealing with it effectively, but the only way that it really gets any monumental importance is in its relationship to my purpose. Because I'm so focused on my purpose, just like that old woman was so focused on finding the lost coin in her house. Even though she still had 9, right? She needed to find the lost coin. That's how focused we want to be on our purpose of self-realization. How do you find a thing you have mislaid or forgotten? You put it in your mind until you call it. The sense of being, of I am, is the first to emerge. Ask yourself whence it comes, or just watch it quietly. When the mind stays in the I am without moving, you enter a state which cannot be verbalized, but can be experienced. All you need to do is to try and try again. So, first of all, what he is explaining here, the way to find the lost coin, the way to realize the self or remember the self, is to focus on what he calls the I am presence. Focusing on the I am presence is the same practice as awareness watching awareness. It's just using different language to point to the same practice. So this is nothing new to us. And he mentions two different ways to do this, and I don't think this is new to us either. One way to do this is to ask, where does this sense of I am come from? Or what am I? Or what is before this sense of person? What am I before I experience myself as a person, right? Practicing inquiry questions. And in fact, if any of you did the meditation this morning that I recommended with today's gentle healing tip, which was called Existence, Consciousness, Bliss, that was really an inquiry type of meditation. There was inquiry questions, right? Looking and inquiring into, am I this sensation? You know, am I awareness? Am I thought, right? It was an inquiry type. So inquiry is one tool that can be used to keep the mind focused on awareness. But he also describes another way to do it. He says you could also just watch it quietly. And this is the method that Michael Langford must have used, because if you practice the meditations with his descriptions, that's really what he's doing. He's just watching awareness quietly. He's not using inquiry. I tend to, in my own personal meditations, use inquiry. That's very effective for me. But he just says things like, notice your awareness, watch your awareness, dwell there. You know, so he's doing the second option. He's just watching it quietly. And that's what he's recommending, Michael Langford. And of course, Nisargadatta is saying either one is fine. Whether it suits you to practice inquiry and use inquiry to keep your focus on awareness, or whether you can just sit and watch awareness, fine. Notice what else he says. Ask yourself whence it comes, or just watch it quietly. When the mind stays in the I am without moving, you enter a state which cannot be verbalized but can be experienced. So it's something that's prior to the I am, right? I think the Hindus typically call it samadhi, but it's finding the source of the I am, or the source of subject-object awareness. Where does that come from? What am I before I am aware of objects, right? And it's finding that source and abiding in that source. And that's what he says cannot be verbalized but can be experienced. And then I love this next sentence. All you need to do is to try and try again. One of the things that Michael Langford did in order to get me to finally start practicing awareness, watching awareness, because I put it off for a long time, for years. So what Michael Langford did that really helped me to get started in awareness, watching awareness practice, is he shared a couple of quotes with me. And I don't have those quotes here in front of me, and I don't have the kind of memory where I can quote a quote unless it's right here in front of me. But I will tell you the gist of the quotes. The gist of the quote was not to judge my own progress. In fact, part of the wording of one of the quotes is that progress may be imperceptible to the practitioner. And that was very important to me, because what was happening up until he shared those quotes with me is I was judging myself as a poor meditator, failing at it every day. And, of course, if you judge yourself as a poor meditator, failing at it every day, well, you can just imagine you don't want to do it. I mean, you don't want to do something that you fail at every day. But when he shared those quotes with me about not judging my own progress, that my own progress may be imperceptible to me, I apparently bought into those ideas immediately. Because then I started to meditate without any judgment, without any assessing whether I was good or bad at it. The only thing I began to do was try my best every day. End of story. And that's all I do to this day. Try my best every day. And that, in a way, is what I hear Nisargadatta saying when he says all you need to do is try and try again. Right? Just keep trying your best every day. Don't judge whether you're good at it, whether you're succeeding, whether you're failing, whether it was a good meditation, whether it was a bad meditation. Just keep trying. All you need to do. You hear those words? All you need to do is to try and try again. And then he says, after all, the sense I am is always with you. Only you have attached all kinds of things to it. Body, feelings, thoughts, ideas, possessions. And so, and we have all done. We may be in the process of undoing it now, so it may not be as true for us as it was at an earlier time. But certainly, we have all attached our sense of I am, our sense of existence, to the body, right? I am the body. We've all done it. I am, you know, you hear people say, I am depressed. I am anxious, I am angry, I am shy, right? I am shy. And some of these things, like I am shy, you know, like I think most of us when we say I am angry, we mean it temporarily. At least in my experience, I never thought of myself as angry forever, right? But I am shy. That can be an identification that we take on as if it's a permanent identity, or I am outgoing. I am introverted. I am extroverted, right? I am my thoughts. Now, people don't go around saying I am my thoughts, but if, you know, if the thoughts say, oh, you know, gee, she's such a, you know, B-I-T-C-H, you know, we feel that, right? And we believe it because we think that's my thought, right? So we think we are our thoughts. Ideas, I'm not 100% sure on the difference between a thought and an idea here, but he lists them separately. Possessions, definitely people identify with their possessions, you know, even their clothing, their cars, their houses, right? So he says, after all, the sense of I am is always with you. That sense of I am is always here. Only you have attached it to all kinds of things. The body, feelings, thoughts, ideas, possessions, etc. All of these self-identifications are misleading. Because of them, you take yourself to be what you are not. Because of them, you take yourself to be what you are not. So I went to a rodeo Friday night, and I do have cowboy hats and a cowboy hat and cowboy boots, and I don't get to wear them very often. For the most part, they just hang in there. but I wore them Friday night. It was fun. But what I noticed was that I was just wearing a cowboy hat and boots. I'm not obviously not identified with them. I put them on once a year. But what I noticed when I was there was that although it was supposed to be finals of some area of the rodeo, there were very few people there. And I think everybody there almost was there because they knew somebody in the competition. It wasn't really that public. You know, we were there, but it wasn't really that public. And so what I noticed was how everybody else also had on cowboy hats and cowboy boots and Wrangler jeans and, you know, the whole bit. But I could see that that's who they thought they were. I mean, that's who they thought they were. Like I put on those clothes for an evening. But this was their identity. They wear them all of the time. That's who they are. They probably don't have any other types of clothes. You probably don't see those girls in capris and sandals. They have on their Wranglers and their boots, and this is how they dress all the time. And you could tell by how worn the clothes were, right? I mean, these guys weren't dressing up for a night out. This is just how they dress. So they take themselves to be cowboys and cowgirls or country folk. I'm only using them as an example because that's a place I was recently, you know, and it really stood out to me. But what this is saying is that we all do this in some way. You know, I identify as a small town girl or an urban, you know, what's an urban person call themselves? An urban person. You know, maybe I identify with my race. Maybe I identify with my spirituality. Country bumpkin, you know. And what this is saying, obviously, is that if we take ourselves to be anything, that's what's blocking the truth of what we are. I remember I was talking to a friend a few years ago. He would say this over and over again. It's really what it really said. He'd always be telling people, I'm a course student. I'm a course student. I'm a course student. And one day I said to him, you're not a course student. He's like, what? You know, and then I explained, you know, that, you know, you want to realize truth and you can't realize truth and identify as a course student. Because anything that you take yourself to be is a block to what you really are. So we do well to kind of pay attention to ourselves and see where we're identifying. Now, again, if our identification is I'm a course student, we may drop the identification and keep right on studying the course, you see. Or if my identification is, you know, I'm an urban person, whatever they call themselves, I may drop the identification and keep right on living in the city. Or I may drop the identification that I'm country folk, but keep right on living in the country. It's about the identification. Who am I? What am I? What do I take myself to be? And that's the end of tonight's little discussion. So we'll continue next week where the questioner is starting to get it, because his next question is, then what am I? So he's starting to understand what we're talking about, that his identification is in the way of his truth. And we'll see where this conversation goes when I get back. So I'll see you guys next Monday evening, and I am releasing the mic.